it's magic. If the music is groovy and makes you feel happy like an old time movie, I'll tell you about the magic and it'll free your soul. But it's like trying to tell a stranger about a rock and roll. Believe in magic. Don't bother to choose if it's junk and music or rhythm and blues. Just go and listen. It'll start with a smile that won't wipe off your face, no matter how hard.
Levitation effect.
Right, right. If you can levitate yourself, I'm imagining you can levitate your battle shorts. Alright, are you ready?
Yeah.
Alright, oh my god. Ladies and gentlemen, Hey Kids Comics, issue 146 in full effect, end of a story arc. We're getting this into the... Good.
This is it. We're on the down slide now.
We are, and this is going to be a fun one. I'm Andrew Farmer. As always, with me, as always, is the Jedi Cole Houston.
Good evening.
As I like to call him.
Don't expect me to be as philosophical as I was in the last issue, because this is the last issue of this arc, and I'm not really sure where my brain is on this one.
I'm not either, but it's going to be fun. So, we're in the middle of a... We're at the end. We're not in the middle anymore. We're at the end of a story arc, and what's it called, Cole?
We are in the middle, or the end, or we're somewhere in the midst.
In somewhere, yeah.
The story arc, where does he get those wonderful toys?
That was even better.
Yeah, I'm improving with each issue.
So at the end, by the end
just
of this...
time for it to be over.
By the end of this, we're going to ask you one more time at the end, so you better be ready. I would like to start this in a weird way, because I just received... some news today, and this will be old news by the time you're hearing it, but I'm sure it looks like Cole, if he hasn't heard it yet, they have now announced that their plan is to release new episodes of one of the shows for the Defenders series universe every 6 months instead of every year. So we're going to get Jessica Jones in December. And then 6 months from then, we're either going to get Luke Cage or the next part of, you know, whatever it's going to be. They're really, you know, upping the timetable for when they're putting these shows out. So we don't have to wait another year. So for the Rather Be Watching Daredevil cast that we usually are, it looks like we're going to be able to do that a little more often than we thought we were going to. So That's big news for us right now. It has nothing to do with the story arc we're in, but that just came across the news desk, so I figured I'd throw it out there for everybody, including
Cole.
But
we'll also be talking about this sort of thing incessantly as time goes on. So.
Exactly. But tonight's episode, what's the title, Cole?
Tonight's episode, we are, as we said, in the midst of this story arc. The final episode is, It's Magic!
Just like that, huh?
Yeah, it's magic.
I'm making that my ringtone for you. I'm gonna cut that, put it right into my phone, so every time my phone rings, it's just Cole going, "It's magic."
We are.
So we've covered the stuff that you hold in your hands. We've covered the stuff that you wear on your body. We've covered the stuff that you use when you're in the military. We've covered the stuff that you drive, fly, or take into the sea. Tonight, we cover all things mystical, and there are a lot of them. A surprising amount when you think about it. Like,
when it comes to wonderful toys, the magic user gets some wonderful stuff thrown their way.
Well, we've always said that there are two ways that you go about, you know, getting powers, you know, getting things, any random things in the Marvel in any comic book universe. One of them is alien, and the other one is magic. So you got two options, really, two ways to go. Aliens or magic. You can get powers a multitude of ways, but if you're getting gear, super awesome gear, that's the way you're getting it, unless you're Tony Stark and you're making it. But that's it. So tonight it is magic. Where would you like to start? The bouquet, the cornucopia.
There's so many places to start, because, you know, there's obvious jumping off points. The iconic obvious points to jump off. And then there are, you know, the lesser known ones, the ones that are still, you know, steeped in the lore.
Right.
And there were three demon brothers, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
What was it? It was like the... I think it is... There were basically, you know, Marvel and DC each had their iconic and, you know, these long history of these different specific artifacts.
Right, mythologies that they've built around their artifacts. Yeah.
It was actually the Demons 3 you know, Marvel had the Warriors 3 and
DC had the Demons 3.
DC had the Demons 3, apparently. Abnegazar, Wrath, and Ghast.
Abnegazar. That's a fantastic name.
Isn't it wonderful? And they had associations with the likes of Felix Faust.
Well.
But there were a trio of artifacts that were always associated with them as well. So, you know, you had your three demons and you had your three artifacts. So you get kind of a sextet of goings on here, if you will.
Yes,
apparently,
even
if you won't. Yeah, I did. Five issues in, I'm finally getting to it.
You're finally getting to sex.
But they had the wheel, the bell, and the jar.
Okay.
These were important artifacts, in at least in the context of these characters. Beyond that, you know, they never really got elevated too terribly farther, but they do occur from time to time. What's interesting is you have these iconic little things that just sort of pop up from time to time.
Okay.
I think there was like a... even one of like the kids, the Super Friends comic, even had the jar was figured into one of the issues of the Super Friends comic.
That's weird.
In more recent years, not the, you know, anything old back in the 70s. That trio of artifacts was even included as part of the multitude of artifacts from both universes that were crucial to the desperate attempt to rescue JLA Avengers.
Oh, God.
It's later, yes.
Oh, God. Yeah. That happened, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and Marvel's no slouch when it comes to mythological, but the thing about Marvel, and DC does it to some extent, is... Marvel really, much like they have their New York and their LA, they have a lot of the mythology is based on what would be real mythology. They didn't invent, they kind of took the Cheaters route. And except for like you know, they have a magical pantheon that includes the likes of Agamotto and the, you know, Doctor Strange's kind of weird pantheon.
Dormammu.
I just really want to cut this whole episode up so far and take what you're saying and just make it into like a dubstep song.
Well, just auto-tune it. It'll be great.
So,
hey, like, work for Will Smith's kid.
That's true.
What?
Not too soon. But is there anything that, like, okay, so Doctor Strange has, like the eye, right?
Yeah. In fact, before we go a little, I just want to touch real quick on these artifacts.
Yeah, please, do it.
I did finally find the definitive answer. It was the Green Bell of Uthul.
Sure.
The Silver Wheel of Nyarlath, and the Red Jar of Kalathos.
Okay.
Not to be confused with the Claw Hand of Calibos from the original Clash of the Titans.
Nobody messes with Harry Hamlin in my house.
That's right.
Because I think Swiftwind was in that, wasn't she?
The Swiftwind's grandfather.
No, it's Swiftwind. Dude, just let me have this. Just I need a win today. Just give me Swiftwind.
It's Swiftwind.
No, yeah.
You couldn't wait to say Swiftwind last time. I couldn't wait to say sex this time.
Why immediately my brain, this is how weak strung out we get at the end of a story arc. my brain went immediately to sex with Swiftwind, which is like a fetish that is so drilled down that I don't even know if it exists on the internet. I implore any one of you to search and see if it is, because I would love to see
that
DeviantArt.
I'm sure you can find that somewhere.
That's horrifying. That's
it truly is, yet well, strangely compelling.
Another interesting thing that they did in DC, and this does refer back to an artifice of sorts, is during the relaunch of this the Seven Soldiers of Victory, they introduced something that has been around and they keep bringing it back, and that is the magical Seamstresses of Slaughter Swamp. Does that ring any bells?
The Seamstresses of Slaughter Swamp.
Yes.
I'm afraid I'm not familiar with
where they weave the fabric of magic, essentially. So,
So it's kind of like the Norns or the Fates of ancient myth.
Yes, but you know they aren't altruistic, as it were. The Seven Soldiers came together serendipitously, which is a really hard sentence to say if you think about it. The Seven Soldiers came together serendipitously to fight them, and they fought them through time and different time periods all at the same time. It's a really cool book. If you haven't read it, pick it up. It's got The Guardian, it's got Frankenstein, it's got Zatanna. It's a magic, kind of a more of a magic based book, but Shining,
it's magic,
there you go. But Shining Knight was prominently featured, if you remember. Shining Knight also wrote a Pegasus, if you recall.
Yes, it did.
And there was the Fae Cauldron, and the Seamstresses of Slaughter Swamp that would make cloaks and suits out of time, essentially, and were fighting for the fairy takeover of the DC universe, and they had to stop it. It was pretty cool. It was a fun read. If you can get a chance to read it, I suggest doing so. DC has a lot of really interesting magic characters. Marvel, not so much. I mean, I like Marvel's magic characters, but they aren't as intricate, I don't think. Like, you don't have a Marvel Constantine. You don't have a Marvel your Dr. Fate, Dr. Strange correlation is there, but you really don't have a Shazam of the Marvel Universe unless you consider Thor the Shazam of the Marvel Universe. I guess you could.
In a way you could, I suppose, because there is that mystical connection. But in the case of Shazam, it all comes down to mystical keywords, as it were. Where Thor is a good example of how, you know, at the time it was okay to call him lame, but physically challenged Dr. Blake had to, you know, walk around on a really crude cane. I guess maybe it was like a gift from his, you know, from some family member or really important patient or something.
Right.
You know, where he's sort of obliged to use this stupid thing when they're more orthopedic type canes available, and he knew it. But it worked out to be, you know, fairly fortuitous, because you kind of need to have a wooden cane to get the full effect of slamming it down and turning into Thor and having your cane replaced with Mjolnir.
Right.
It's a Mjolnir. Which is like the slurred version of Gary Mjoldeer, a comedian in the 70s. Mjolnir.
That is the most oblique reference, I think, that has ever been made on this show to date, which is saying something.
Yes, that is. I mean, we're pushing 150 issues, and I've actually topped all of the hundreds of oblique references made thus far.
Hey, Auto Man was referenced last issue, and this issue, it's like you have to keep topping yourself. I don't.
Yeah. Well, there's an endless. Speaking of being like the TARDIS, as we did in the last issue, that's sort of how my brain works. It's just this TARDIS chock full of useless stuff that bubbles up, and I can just grasp at anything that happens to fly by.
Right. Oh, my God.
Who knew? But, Mjolnir is one of those great iconic magic toys where, you know, you see the hammer of Thor and you know that it is the hammer of Thor.
Right.
More so if you had we talked before in a previous issue of this show about how there are iconic things that you look at and you know who that character is. And I think we may have even mentioned that you wouldn't necessarily, if you just saw a comic cover from across the comic shop that showed a shovel, you wouldn't necessarily equate that off the top of your head with the singing shovel of King Arthur as wielded by the Shoveler in Flaming Carrot Comics.
Right. But if you saw...
If you've seen Mystery Men, and you know, in the movie, he shoveled very well. Apparently, I'm told in the comics, he actually has the mystical singing shovel of King Arthur, which was
that brings
an associate item to the singing sword.
That brings up a really interesting character that I kind of wanted to talk about, and I don't know a ton of about. But it's... do you remember Mage?
Oh, yes.
Matt Wagner's book.
Yes, the character Kevin Matchstick, if I remember correctly.
Right. Kevin Matchstick was the character's name. He discovers, you know, he's called by the wizard Mirth, and he possesses a magic baseball bat. And the magic baseball bat.
Such a good obscure reference.
Yeah, and the magic baseball bat's actually Excalibur. Kevin Matchstick is actually King Arthur, and Mirth is Merlin. And the whole story is basically the Arthurian tale. You get like a Grendel story out of it. You get the story of Gilgamesh out of it. So, you know, you get the hero's journey told over and over again by Matt Wagner in the annals of Mage, which is a book that I've read a few issues of, but I really want to read more of, and I didn't get a chance to, so I'm glad this came up as...
I am, because I was familiar with Mage, obviously, and I knew the character's name, but I precious little else. I remember seeing the covers and his... Black Adam T-shirt and Luke Skywalker lightsaber baseball bat,
right?
But I there was never anything about it that spoke to me, and now all of a sudden there is. Now I feel like, well, I was really being kind of a elitist ass there, never to have pursued a lot of these things. But that's part of the process, and one of the things we encourage on this show is go out and discover
right
comics. And I've been challenged to do so myself.
And Matt Wagner, I don't think I've ever read a Matt Wagner book that was bad. So it I don't know why I never. I read a few issues back in the heyday of when this book was released, but I never, you know, really sook it out. So I need to I have errands to run, sucky. Sorry, that was my Bill from True Blood impression. I never read. So I'm gonna get all over that. So that's a good obscure reference. The if you remember the Top Cow universe, it was replete with magical artifacts, just chock-a-block. Like, you couldn't get on an elevator in New York without running into a sword or a glove or a whatever, Nornstone. The Witchblade is in my mind the most prominent of those.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah.
Which apparently alleviates
that's sort of
the need.
The breakaway one, to be say the least.
Yeah, which apparently eliminates the need for any clothing, by the way. I don't know if...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the magical ability.
What the Witchblade does...
Here we go.
It has a unique effect in that it imbues its user with these incredible mystical powers and sheathes them in a highly erotic and minimally... you know, very, very leaving minimal to the imagination type of clothing, if you will, in the form of this armor. And the thing about it is, what it does is that is the physical form. That is what the eye sees to everyone else. Imagine, if you will, when Sue Storm turns invisible.
Right.
She's incapable largely of recognizing her own invisibility. In fact, one would argue that even when she's invisible to herself, she may not appear invisible. It was never portrayed that way, but I think that would be a compelling way to look at invisibility.
I think that's true. So
you can't see through your own self. And in much that way, what the Witchblade does is it makes you think you're in this badass full body head to toe suit of armor.
Nice.
So, you know, it makes it easy for someone like the, I can't remember the character's name, but the woman who is imbued with that, the Witchblade gauntlet there, it makes it easier for her to not have this hair trigger need to say my eyes are up here, because she imagines she's got this big helm on, so people are just, you know, they're just happen, their gaze happens to be in the chest aisle area or down around her midriff, solely because they're just in awe of this badass suit of armor that she imagines she's wearing, because it's a misogynistic piece of mystical equipment.
I'm not comfortable.
Very womanizing.
I'm not comfortable with your use of the word sheaths, by the way. I had a really guttural negative reaction, almost like the word moist. When you hear the word moist, like the word sheaths really put me off guard. So I just...
we will minimize that corollary from now on.
Off-putting, the word sheaths.
And you have now... For the record, have said that word more often.
What word? Sheaths?
Good as that word. It's sort of like you bouncing about behind the stage of the theater yelling Hamlet at the top of your lungs. Well, I would at least have the courtesy to say the Scottish play.
Wow. That's a reference. Holy hell. So what's your favorite mystical instrument, Cole, in comic books?
Wow. That's a good one, because there are, you know, the ones that are the icons that you just can't help but have spring to mind. But really, my personal favorite, oddly enough, we're going back to Alpha Flight.
Oh, I know where you're going. This is a good one. I thought about
yes.
this earlier.
With Shaman's medicine bag.
The
or Shaman.
Seven demon bag or whatever Shaman. He carries, yeah.
Yeah, that bag, what's amazing about it was such... I think it was the single most clever magical device since... And like, at its time, there had not been something that clever in at least a quarter century, if not a half century. No one had come up with something really unique and clever in the way of magical devices in decades.
Right.
And John Byrne comes and hits us with this little tiny... leather pouch that's about the size of a tricorder case, and I'm trying to reach my people here.
You know your audience, buddy. I'll give you that.
Yeah. And you know, he crams about half his arm down into this thing that's only about the length of a quarter of his arm, and pulls out whatever he needs. So it's like the ultimate utility belt. It's like the TARDIS of utility belts.
Right. No, it is.
And it's this mystical stuff, like, oh, well, you know, here, this guy's coming. You know what would be really handy right now is if we had somebody like Iceman. Hey, not a problem. I got the, you know, Tcholt'tec stick of ice.
Let me pull it out of my bag. Let me pull it out of my D&D bag of holding that I got on my side.
No, movie almost like, I just happened to bring it with me. You know? Excuse me while I whip this out.
I got my D&D bag of holding over here. Let me just reach up in there. Like either John Byrne was steeped heavily in, you know, the tradition of the American Indian, or he was a really big D&D nerd. I'm not sure.
Or a combination thereof. But what's so clever about it is that it, like any good mystical device, it's shrouded in mystery. We're never meant to know how or why it works.
Right.
And yet, you know, at the pinnacle of Byrne's power, he also illustrates his ability to, name characters as if he's writing a children's book. And one of the members of, I believe it was Omega Flight, who finally, you know, is getting, he winds up in like Delta Flight or whatever the the evil group was. Really, it's like somebody got all the guys who didn't make the cut. They were never even given the chance. Most of them naturally turned evil because that's what you do.
You know, that's what you do.
You had you had the likes of Diamond Lil. I think they were the Beta Flight actually became like this. Just decided they turned evil when the Project H was canceled.
Well, they had to do something.
Due to budget cut. Yeah. So, they basically, you had this character who was like this, you know, super genius. And of course, and his name was Alec something, like Alec Thorne or Alec Tobias or whatever it was. And,
sure.
His sobriquet, a little French there, he's Canadian, was Smart Alec.
No.
And I just vomited a little.
Gross.
Yeah, but when confronted, he managed to get his hands on the medicine bag at one point. And he's complaining about, you know, the whole time he was training in Omega Flight and Beta Flight, that Shaman was just pulling everything short of a Winnebago out of this bag. And, you know, in his scientific mind, has no place for magic.
Right.
So he grabs the bag and does the unthinkable, even though he's being warned off, looks inside. He looks inside, and then his brain is instantly fried.
Right. There, no more. That's just done. You're done.
And you're not meant. And that was one of the neat things, is up to that point, you start to realize, wait a minute. Yeah, he just always kind of like blind reaches. Every time Shaman needs something, he's just kind of like, you know, like he's trying to get a wallet out of his back pocket or something he can't really see.
Well, he summons it by
thought. Deliberate, because you're not meant to go kind of like, you're supposed to kind of root around there until you touch. That feels like the ice stick of Tlachichek, you know.
That's we've summoned that thing into existence now, by the way.
That's right. I want to see the ice stick of Tlachichek, which is probably the first time I've said it twice, the same word. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, that's so very clever, is you didn't really, I don't think they may have dwelled on it a bit, but it wasn't just harped on.
Right.
That no man is meant to see what's inside the bag. And in fact, one of the really strange things was that he later uses his mystical powers to miniaturize and preserve Smart Alec until he can figure out some way to restore his sanity.
Oh,
and
really?
And he just tosses him down in the bag for sake of
in the great move of irony, he ends up in the bag that made him insane.
And the thing is, the little miniaturized version is he's like frozen in the pose of holding the bag and looking down into it.
See, I like, there's a lot to like. Like, that's the problem, is there's so many things. Like, I like, oddly enough, I like the Blue Devil's Trident a lot.
Oh, yeah.
That one for me is cool. You know, there's Magic Sword, which I always thought was kind of cool. The Muramasa.
The thing is with going back to the Trident really quickly, the original was technology and would have fit handily into handheld.
Okay.
And we've kind of gone full circle, because once he goes from being a stuntman in a inexplicably high-tech suit for a movie.
Yes.
That gets fused to him, to actually becoming a literal blue demon.
Mm-hmm.
Blue devil. Then the Trident is a mystical object.
Right.
So that's a great choice, because it brings us full circle in this arc, in that we didn't bring up Blue Devil's Trident in his original incarnation in handheld, but this is a character that can actually operate in both ends of this arc.
I'll take that. I hadn't thought about it, but I'll... Yes. But honestly,
that might sound like that's something I couldn't have not stopped thinking about for months.
You could have just run with it, and it would have been fine.
I just sort of pulled it out,
For me, it is, it's got to be, and it always has been, if I ever got to go to it, it's the Black Knight's Ebony Blade.
I actually had to look up what the name of his ebony blade was, and it turns out it's the ebony blade.
That's right. It does, crafted originally in a ceremony to become an Arthurian knight, with Merlin teaching him how to do it. Then he had to choose the blade over a chalice and a mace. Or was it a hammer? It might have been a chalice, a hammer, and a shield. Then having to destroy them so they couldn't be turned back on the ebony blade. Handed down generation to generation until it ended up in the hands of the Black Knight that we know from the West Coast Avengers and sometimes regular Avengers, Dane Whitman. Also flying horse. But the blade that could cut through anything was the ebony blade. That was its claim to fame, was that it could slice, dice, julienne, anything at all. Awesome. And it was always something I was drawn to when I was, because at the time when I was reading it was like probably the mid-80s is when I started reading the Avengers. And you had Iron Man, and you had Hawkeye, and you had Wonder Man, and you had like I think Tigra at the time.
Yes.
Pre everybody's favorite burlap wearing master of the mystical arts, Dr. Druid, but this was a character that really spoke to that D&D sword and sorcery thing that I really liked. It brought those two worlds together for me in that he was a knight that wore armor. You know, he was a scientist knight, which was always kind of a cool thing to me. I really liked that. That was always a cool thing, like the blade that can cut through anything.
You've got that, all those elements, yet you also have that sort of modern touch, you know, where he is a contemporary man who is also having, you know, at his disposal all the trappings and weaponry of the ancients, as
it were. And the cool thing about one of the cool things that they talk about in the comics a bit, but I don't think they overdid it, and I don't think they talked about it too much, was that there is the blade itself, much like all things in the Arthurian parable, had a downside, had a negative effect that if you killed too much with it, if you used it, you know, if you went into were basically the Perseus of war or the Achilles, you know, and just went whole hog with it to win wars and fight battles and not use it for right and just means, you would develop a bloodlust and never be able to stop killing.
Yeah.
And that for me was a cool little, you know, that was the downside. That was the negative. That was the parable, was we're giving you this ultimate weapon, but you can't use it. So he hardly ever would, you know, kill anybody with the blade. It was mainly just opening, you know, it was a really fancy can opener for a long time, because he was always scared that he would be taken by the bloodlust, and just go on a killing spree. So for me, it's the ebony blade. I love it.
That's a good choice, because it does, it's got so much history and it surprisingly held water, you know, amongst contemporaries like War Machine.
Right. And another cool thing about Black Knight, not that this has anything to do with the topic, but in the 1970s, they issued a series of Marvel Value Stamps, and he was one of the Marvel Value Stamps.
Ah.
I should try to find that.
Absolutely, you should.
That would probably be, it's probably going to cost me an arm and a leg, but I would really like to have a Black Knight. He's one of my favorite Marvel characters. He's in my top five.
And if I'm not mistaken, he may, and I could be completely dead wrong here, but he may have even made it on a Slurpee Cups.
No!
Because they were jumping all over the place with Slurpee Cups back then. Even Shang-Chi made a Slurpee Cup.
What?
But I could be off there, but I think, you know, Black Knight would have been oddly cool enough. But then there's, you know, we're talking about like Swiss Army Knife of what have you. The Swiss Army Knife of magic has to be Doctor Strange.
And again, what you were saying about a modern man being taken by the mystical is really the story of Doctor Strange.
Absolutely, he's sort of the a reluctant hero. who then, you know, once he gets introduced to the mystical arts, he goes all in. It's like, you know, he thought medical school was cool. This is something else. Plus, you know, his bloody hands.
Right, his mangled and gnarled hands.
So, you know, it's an interesting thing because he's got, like, what? I don't know if, you know, the ancient one just said, you know, they got a bunch of stuff, you know, in the old Rumpus room I'd like to get rid of. Could you take it and put it in your place because I need the space, you know? Because he winds up with all the cool stuff.
Right.
You know, he gets the several books, for one thing.
Just a couple books, like, yeah. Just a couple.
But he's got some, like, really important books that everybody wants a copy of. And they, you know, the one thing about magic is you still have to do it old school.
Right,
you can't go to Kinko's and just, you know, you can't run the Darkhold off at Staples.
You can't pull up the vast tome of Maganato on your iPad and just read off of that.
You try to photocopy it, it just gets you like old back issues of Cats and Jammer Kids or something.
That's the worst magical curse I've ever heard. It's awful.
It was a strange. Maybe that was what they had at hand, you know, when they were.
And it's done that for all time, curse. By the way, for all time. That happens. If you try to make copies of Darkhold.
It predates the Cats and Jammer Kids.
By millennia.
The Darkhold actually predates the Cats and Jammer Kids by, like epochs. And somehow that leaked out enough at some point in history that it became the very thing. And then later the photocopy machine was. So it took a long time for that curse to be worthwhile.
Right.
But somehow someone knew. They had the foresight to be prepared. But you have both the amulet and its requisite eye of Agamotto. You have the orb of Agamotto. You have the cloak of levitation.
Right, which has a sweet collar on it,
by the way. One of the baddest-ass text. Yeah, it is one of the baddest-ass costume elements ever.
By far.
One of the things that I think that the early artists at Marvel did well was to piss off artists for all eternity. And what I mean by that is they gave you Spider-Man, Doctor Strange. They gave you characters that are a pain in the ass to draw and put them at the forefront. So you got to draw their ass all the damn time.
Right.
Everybody wants to do Fantastic Four Spider-Man, yet secretly they don't want those titles.
Right, it's the hardest job that you're going to love to do.
Iron Man, I mean, that's why, like, when Paul Chadwick created Concrete, he just took a picture of the thing and erased all the rocks.
Right.
And there it was. I actually stole that from Frank Anderson, a friend of the show, who said he wanted to do a comparator where you literally, if you erased all the rocks from the thing, you got Concrete, and if you erased the ears and nose from Snoopy, you got Bone.
That's fantastic. That's absolutely
isn't that amazing. That needed recognition.
Thank you, Frank. Out there on your Manicore Ranch. That's awesome. That is a
but you know the thing about
thing.
It. But you know you've got all the filigree on his cape that you have to you know constantly draw and ink, and he's got the stylish sash going on and the mystical symbol. It's one of the more fascinating characters, but he's got like all this cool stuff at his disposal as well, and even the nice thing about a character like that is you like that. Ice stick earlier, you can just fart out new names.
Right, just you know? any combination of more vowels than non-vowels. It's Hawaiian in origin.
It'll just like move a sword and a helmet and a book and a vial out of the way, and then, oh, look here, I forgot I had one of these. It's the skull of Mushushu.
Right, just as long as it has more vowels than consonants, you can name it that.
Now there's the skull of Mushushu.
Can I tell you my favorite
thing?
My favorite thing about the Eye of Agamotto is this. All right, it's a super powerful magical artifact that Doctor Strange wears basically around his neck, right? It's the amulet, the eye. It's not that it's super powerful that impresses me. It's the intimidation factor. And here's what I mean. Like, it's one thing to have an amulet around your neck that you can that will do magical things. Like, you know you have it. It's a fallback. It's another thing entirely when the person that's facing you that you're about to use that amulet on has to look at it while it opens up and blinks at you. That, my friend, is an intimidation factor level 100. Next level stuff. That's what that is.
Absolutely. Plus, it kind of, in much the same way in the last issue, Jack Kirby had created Ernest Borgnine, I think that Flava Flav was inspired by the Eye of Agamotto.
Probably, in some small way. I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right.
The idea of putting a giant clock on your chest came from, like, well, you know, the eyes have been taken. What else is there? So he went like the Clock King route.
So there's two people that I really want to talk about that you might not have considered, even though it's you. So at least one of the two I think you probably have considered. The first is, we talked about, and this is another full circle character. We talked about in issue 3, we talked about Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, yes.
But we did not talk about Alan Scott.
No, we didn't. In fact, that he had crossed my mind. In fact, that was one of the inspirations for the breakdown of this arc.
Okay.
Was actually the dichotomy of your technology versus magic achieving the same end.
Because it's that paradox. I guarantee you, if we took characters, if we could quantify all comic book characters pre-19 or start at the beginning and go through now and then do and then map points on a graph for characters that use technology and characters that use magic, you could see those lines cross somewhere around 1978, 1979, when, you know, technology got to the point where it made sense to create characters based on it versus creating characters based on magic. You know, like, there has to be a corollary there. Because what we saw was Alan Scott was the Green Lantern. He was the Justice Society's Green Lantern. Yeah. His lantern was powered by magic. He could not. He was vulnerable to wood, which leaves room for a lot of jokes. But his...
Naturally.
That's a good joke in and of itself. But there has to be... I mean, am I out of my mind here? There has to be a corollary, right?
No, I think you're on the right track there, because there is exactly that sort of corollary.
Because you start with this Iron Man that's based in magic, and then you get an Iron Man then they realize, hey, we got to flip this on its head and do an Iron Man that's more technology alien-based to catch up with the times.
Well, absolutely, and I think that's one of the things is that the nuclear age, science age, replaced the magic age. There was a time when magic was the best catalyst, and you know, we had talked about how you wind up with the one supplants the other because you need to capture the imagination of an audience that isn't going to buy into magic any longer.
Right, because like Tony Stark said, you know, magic is science we don't understand yet. And I think that's true in comic books. Because if you look at the original Justice Society, it was Flash back in those days, but I don't think it was ever like the Speed Force is doing this. I just think that he was fast.
Yeah.
Right,
he was fast guy. Science accidentally made him super fast in an irreproducible result.
Hawkman was a magic-based character, I believe. He was an alien back then, like he became.
He was science-based originally, it was oddly, you know, there's always 100 characters we don't think about. In Suit Up, he would have been a perfect example. His wings were the oomph metal.
Okay, so that was current.
Anti-gravity metal. Then you can also add to the list of sound effects I've made.
That I want to cut out, right?
Yeah.
So he's been that way from Jump Street.
Yeah.
Not he didn't start as the iteration of the Egyptian of Kung Fu.
Of Kung Pao.
Of whatever they want to, yeah. Whatever they want to go with there.
Feng Shui.
Yeah. Well, the other one I wanted to talk about, which I think is more in your wheelhouse, in a big way, is Bwana Beast.
Oh, Bwana Beast.
Because he has an amulet that lets him access, much like Vixen does, it lets him access the red, which is the primal animal side of magic. Versus...
Even before it was the red.
Right.
He was the red when the red was uncool.
That's right.
And the other interesting thing about that is DC had a penchant for a magical character. Characters kind of like, you know, being in touch with magic, with nature, because Congo Bill had a magic ring that was much more limited in its scope.
Right.
But it allowed him to change brains with a golden gorilla that in recent years was shot dead by some jerk dentist from Minnesota.
Oh, that topical reference. Look at that topical reference. But
I had to voice that somewhere.
Could you imagine how sad that gorilla was? Like, or when they switched. Like, that's just the worst, right? Like how sad the dude was with the gorilla brain, like, just hanging out. Like, that's kind of sad.
When you get your brain back in your body and your mouth tastes like grubs.
Right, or your own butt. Like, it's not good.
Yeah, and then the apartment's trash and there's dung everywhere.
What's wrong with us? So many things. So many things. So what? Okay. So what? Where do they fall short? You know, we always cover this, but what?
Oh yeah. Well, in fact, one of the things that came to mind is, you know, so many of these mystical devices and objects, demysticism, if you will, are just really cool.
Right.
And some of them are kind of cool, depending on what angle you're looking at them. Like, the evil eye looks really cool when it's pointed at you, apart from the fact that you're probably going to be dead. But if you look at it at the right angle, it looks like a big blue plunger.
Right, right.
So, you know, you kind of have to be careful how you display the evil eye in your treasure vault. And then some are simplicity itself, like so-called Tesseract, or the Cosmic Cube, as it was known, which, you know, I think now it's firmly settled in the land of mysticism, where there was always some conjecture in my mind as to whether it was a mystical object or a scientific object.
Right.
It was the product of super science versus sorcery. To kind of paraphrase the opening to Thunder of the Barbarian. But sometimes you get things that are just dumb and dull, like the giant pry bar of the wreck.
Oh, nice. That is a good one.
Where a
common
object. I mean, it could have been, he could have been the plumber if Enchantress had enchanted a plunger or a big monkey wrench, or, you know, it just whatever happened to be laying around. You know, like, he stuck with it. And you have to give it to Wrecker. He went all in. But, and then, like, you know, one of the most ultimate affronts, apparently Crusher Creel had been incarcerated for crimes against mankind in the last remaining 1920s prison in America, where striped prison outfits with optional tops were the norm, and
right.
The classic Laurel and Hardy prison movie Ball and Chain was still very much in use out in the giant yard where people busted up rocks for no real good reason. Probably because weight machines hadn't been invented yet. And so he gets his ball and chain enchanted. And again, he runs with it. Or actually, he gets enchanted, but, you know, carries the ball and chain as a good source of iron. Both for turning into iron and also for the iron's good in your diet.
Right. Well, sure.
And when you turn into iron or something even more dense and powerful than iron, you can actually, you know, take a little nibble off the chain itself from time to time. So, much like Matter Eater Lad.
Matter Eater Lad.
So you have some, you know, I think as far as the iconic or the mystical objects that are out there, the enchanted crowbar, you know, the shoveler can get away with it because that's parody anyway.
Right.
But the mystic crowbar, it's a bit of a stretch, you know. You have no choice but to become a supervillain called the Wrecker.
I totally agree.
It's like, thank you, Enchantress. Now I have to engage in... you may have been a career criminal already anyway. I really haven't read up on the Wrecker. But as bits and pieces go, that's one of the most ludicrous that's out there.
I totally concur.
That's my go-to for...
For nutso magic stuff. See, I don't really have a real negative one, but one that I thought was cool that I think we should talk about because we're getting ready to wrap up is the suit. And again, this is a suit, so it definitely falls into this category, and that's the suit worn by Rory Reagan, and that is the Ragman suit.
Ah, the Tatterdemalion of Justice.
That's right. So. The Ragman suit that was, you know, since like 1500, it has been in existence, and it was worn by this one family who, you know, most prominently used it to defend Jews in the ghetto against Nazi soldiers. It was created by the Jewish people for the golem to wear. So the golem in DC was supposed to wear this suit, but it ended up in Rory's hands, and Rory used it for justice and to fight crime alongside of one Bruce Wayne, the Dark Knight Batman. So whenever you would kill someone, it would absorb their soul into the suit if they were evil. And that's how he retained his power. So it was sort of a weird symbiosis there. Cool idea for a mystical character. All right. Well, do you have any final thoughts on this story arc, man? Because we are done, man.
We have wrapped it up. We did talk a bit about that transition there with the Ghost Rider mystical.
That's true.
The Biko mysticism, in which case the motorcycle itself, the actual physical, regular kick-ass chopper of its day, might have been sheathed in magic.
My butt just puckered up. What'd you do? I blacked out for a second. What
I
were
had
we talking
to slip
about?
One more in there for
no,
you.
No. First of all, let's not talk about sheathing and slipping. This is a this is a family show, damn it. But
no,
yes.
In closing, I want to say there is a mystical object that is wielded to great effect throughout the history of comics.
Okay.
In various forms, and that is the very Excalibur that was mentioned. Most notably, or most dubiously, resurrected in comics in the painful Camelot 3000.
Has the power to make you wait 13 months for the final issue.
Exactly. And I do want to point out that in much the same way that everybody, including Stan Lee, were trying their hand at yanking the hammer of Thor out of the ground in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there is actually a scene in Camelot 3000 where various laser equipment and even a hydraulic, robotic, strange sort of Avengers air chariot thing is trying to be utilized to yank Excalibur out of the stone.
I can tell, like, the thing about Excalibur 3000 and you is that I can tell it hurt you. Like, It actually, the fact that that book didn't come out for a year, you still hold on to that. Like,
yeah, and you know, nothing could really make up for that. And the fact that when that you finally held in your hand the conclusion, it was like they'd forgotten what they'd written in the previous year.
Right. Well, guys, thank you for listening to these five issues. This is one of those that got kind of put out there that Cole created at. It was one of the challenges, you know, where could we do it in one? Could we do it, you know, it's obviously more than one, but is it five? And
yes.
I think that we pulled it off.
The biggest challenge, I think, was just the categorization. How do you break this down into five parts?
Right.
And so, each iteration raised more questions than it answered.
So thank you, Cole. You put this out there. You made it work. And I appreciate it. You know, you've done stellar work.
Well, we have taken the whole concept of these wonderful toys and taken it places I never imagined. I certainly wouldn't have imagined half the stuff that came out of the last issue.
No.
In which case, I was particularly punchy and
right.
Had some strange revelations that I can either confirm or deny it actually came from my mind.
Well, it's been a really fun arc, and I really appreciate getting a chance to do it, and doing the show in general. You know, it's a great escape, and I couldn't be happier that you guys listened to it. So thank you, everybody, for listening. You know, if
absolutely.
It wasn't for
you... We do hope you enjoy and have sort of rethought some things because of the strange places these arcs often take us.
So we don't know what we're doing yet, but we're going to figure it out. Well, no, we do know. What are we going to do next?
I believe so. I think... Well, there were a couple of choices, and I cannot remember, honestly, which one I settled on. And I sent it to you. That way we could both forget.
Right. And we both promptly did, so that's
yes,
awesome.
Yes, so...
So no promises on what's coming, but...
It is going to be a light palate cleanser, as we often do after these arcs.
Right.
Honestly, there's a couple of possibilities, and I don't want to attest to one or the other, because there are some concepts that have been... A great many of our shows, the title concepts and everything... will oftentimes, by the time we actually record them and air them, many of them are months and months old. Some of them are edging up on a year old.
Right. We've got a list
of other ideas that we need to jump on quicker or that we like better. But we use every part of the concept, and we have plotted out this show for a good two or three months into the future,
right.
Maybe longer. I have lost track because I keep coming up with new concepts. As Andy can attest, I'll like, oh, here's another one for you.
Right.
We have a wonderful arc coming up that is about toys.
And that's going to be great. I can't wait for that one. I cannot wait. Okay, so why don't you plug us up and we'll get out of here.
In honor of the Justice Jogger.
Yeah.
This, of course, we're coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. And speaking of the Jedi Cole universe, if I don't miss my guess, this would be... Yes, we would still be well in time for you to have a chance to mark down on your calendar. August 22nd, 2015 in Arlington, Texas, is the Jedi Cole universe comic toy and collectible swap meet. This is the 7th or 8th swap meet event that I've produced. I'd actually have to go look at my website
to know exactly how many
I've produced, but it's been 6 years since I've had one.
Wow.
And that was rather striking when I got inspired by the likes of our, amongst others, Danae Griffith of Lubbock Con.
Sure.
Her enthusiasm was just infectious. And... So after a six-year hiatus, I'm bringing back the comic toy and collectible swap meet. The first one was in July of 2006. And the last one was in July of 2009.
Wow.
So it is coming back to you at last. You can find out about that at Convention Awareness Project Texas, which is cap-tx.info. Scroll on down to August, which it'll be in August as you listen to this, but because it's my website, there's an extra big
right
listing for this particular show. Click on that. That'll take you to the website. You can see the history of the swap meet. There's going to be there's a vendor spotlight page. We're going to be having an artist alley, an invitational artist alley, where I've invited some great artists to come out and be part of the show. And that page will be up soon, as well as some other information, because I'm trying to make the site look a little more exciting than it does right now. But if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in August, specifically on August 22nd, 11 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the Bob Duncan Center in Vandergriff Park in Arlington on Center Street, please do drop by. Admission is a mere $2, half price with a flyer that will be available at a number of DFW area comic shops. And if you mention that you heard about it on Hey Kids Comics, that's as good as having the flyer.
That's right.
And you can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can follow our Twitter feed at TheJediColeU. And we will be back next week with a brand new little palate cleanser. We're moving into some other great stuff. Some different stories that we've really wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Different aspects of comics, different aspects of comic characters. So look for us to just be all over the map. We're going to wax philosophic one week and just be nutty and goofy the next.
Speaking of nutty and goofy, as we walk out the door here, I'm giving you guys some homework out there. I'm not going to tell you what it's about, but just go search the interwebs for Papa Shorty. Just go check it out.
Yes. Look for Papa Shorty. If you need to, put Papa Shorty Marvel.
Yeah, just check it out. Could be the most underutilized comic book character in the history of Marvel Comics. They really fell short on that one.
I want to make sure that if you're a subscriber to Loot Crate.
Okay. There you go.
There was a book that was The League of Regrettable Superheroes.
Nice.
Was an Amazon exclusive edition of, or Amazon, a Loot Crate. What do you call it? Loot Crate exclusive edition of this book, but it is available. I believe you can get, you can get it on Amazon for $12.35. I highly recommend this book because it is nothing short of brilliant. I think the only difference is the covers on the regular and the Loot Crate edition. But the thing about it is, what the League of Regrettable Heroes does is it gives you, broken down into golden, silver, and modern age comics, a wonderful overview of some of the most ridiculous characters.
Oh, now I've got to get that.
That ever, and it's absolutely brilliant. And in fact, I think there may be more characters in the non-exclusive version. Just looking at the pages. In fact, there are. Oh, damn it! Now I got to go buy the real thing.
Right.
But it's characters that you wouldn't believe actually existed in comics. In fact, as I'm looking through the pages on Amazon that they'll show you, there are tons that aren't in the edition I have. But some of my favorites were like Dr. Hormone.
Oh yes.
Who apparently was an actual comic character. There was one. I think it may be. The Dr. Vampire, was it? Yeah, this character called Dr. Vampire that apparently appeared in a single comic, something like in the 40s, that had the one appearance of this character had no credits. No one has a clue who the creative team were.
That's so great. That is so great.
Oh my God, I have to own the full book now.
Well, you go shopping for the full book, I'll go shopping for the full book, they're going to go shopping for the full book, and hopefully Volume 2 will have Papa Shorty in it. You guys are awesome. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.